Hey everybody, welcome back to another episode of Film Haven Reviews. I'm your host Sawyer, as always, and today we are starting a whole brand new theme. Now I know last week I had mentioned that I might do underwater movies, that I might do rabbit hole thrillers, and what I've decided to do is none of those. I started doing some rabbit hole thrillers and it just wasn't really hitting. Wasn't sure if I really wanted to even talk about the movie that I was watching, so I was just like, you know what? Let's just go back to the old spreadsheet, take a gander at what I got, and I found one that I've been waiting to do for a long time. I've been kind of just waiting for the right moment, especially since I did a lot of horror earlier in the year and at the end of last year, and so I was kind of waiting to do this theme, but I think the time is right, and that is the Mindbender theme, or I was saying reality-breaking, and then I was reading a review for this movie, and I heard someone say that it was like the ultimate rubber reality film. And I really like that term, so I think I'm going to steal it. I think I want to name this theme the rubber reality theme, which is really fun. I like that idea. It's kind of like mind-bending, makes sense, or reality-breaking. There's a bit of reality is being toyed with in all three of the movies that we're going to be talking about. And this movie today, Jacob's Ladder, has been on my list for decades, literally probably decades at this point. I'm not sure. But I've always kind of, this is one of those movies where I just danced around it and I was like, I'll get to it one day. And I always kind of thought that it was going to be really messed up. Like for some reason I had it in my head that like it was going to be like some kind of disturbing film. I mean, it is disturbing in some ways, but it was a lot more of a drama than I was expecting. But I was actually pleasantly surprised by that. I thought there was going to be a lot more horror to it, but the horror is more in the concept than it is in the actual horrifying things that you're seeing. There are really only like a choice few scenes of actual like horror, at least in like the classic like imagery sense of the word. The main character is being chased what he feels like deep by demons. And so when those demons are kind of manifested in his mind, it's kind of, you know, it's kind of scary. There's some like horrific images with the demons. It's more just kind of high strangeness with that. It's not so much that they're scary, like, oh no, like horror movie scary. It's more just like, whoa, you know, I said whoa a lot watching the movie. The imagery is more like not shocking, but kind of, it is disturbing, maybe is the right word, especially in the context of the story, because in some ways, whenever the main character, Tim Robbins' character, Jacob, is playing, like, you know, he's having a somewhat normal life, and then when these things happen, it's that classic thing that you see a lot nowadays in psychological movies where the person's crazy and their reality is breaking down while they're trying to live a normal life, which means that their reality is breaking down in the midst of normal scenarios. Like he has a scene where he's at a dance party and he just starts writhing on the floor and screaming because he thinks that people are demons. And that's the scary part. It's not that they're the demons, it's not the imagery, it's the idea that you could be in regular society and thinking that something really crazy is going on and everyone's out to get you, but in reality, the reality of it is that you're just a guy screaming on a floor and causing a scene. So this movie really did get me thinking. It was great. I really enjoyed it. I thought that it was a great journey. It 100% it fits this theme, and it's really a thinker. It's one of those movies that kind of sticks with you afterwards, I would say. Allie watched it with me, and we've been talking about it a little bit because it really, like, on top of being kind of a complex plot narratively, very, it's one of those things where you're kind of trying to piece everything together, and then there is a twist at the end, which kind of, it's one of those good twists that gives a lot of substance to the film, especially on a second watch. Actually, I haven't watched it again, but I've read on reviews that people say that it's one of those movies that actually gets better the second time you watch it, and I can 100% see that. I'm going to give a little synopsis of the movie, and then I might do kind of what I did on the mystery thrillers and stuff, where I do tell the spoiler, just because it's kind of hard to talk about this movie without the whole idea. And also I would also say that the twist is not really, it's not really that like, it's not something that's going to break your experience. I think if anything, if you're only going to watch this movie once, like if you don't plan on watching it again, then I would say stick around and just listen to the twist, because it does enrich your experience. And I feel like I feel like if I had known the twist the whole time, then I would be picking up a lot of things that I didn't before. But that's, you know, that's part of the experience. So if you really want to watch this movie dry and not with any kind of spoilers, then go for it. I would just wait for, I'm going to give you the synopsis. If it sounds good, it's on Amazon. Unfortunately, it's pretty expensive. But it is really good. I bet you could probably go to your local like used DVD store or something and find it. It is kind of like, it's like, I don't know. Is it a low-key classic? I've heard of it my whole life, and I've always heard good things about it. The director, Adrian Lin, he's directed a lot of movies within that time frame. Like, he directed Flashdance in 83, obviously pretty iconic for a few scenes. And then he does a lot of movies that are kind of like sexual in nature. Maybe you can call them sexual thrillers. I'm not sure. He kind of reminds me a little bit of like a Brian De Palma. He did Fatal Attraction, of course, very famous movie. He did Jacob's Ladder, and then he did Indecent Proposal, which that's also pretty famous. Robert Redford, Woody Harrelson, and who is it? Demi Moore. And then he did a couple other, Unfaithful. I remember when that movie was on TV, like on like TNT or whatever, growing up with Diane Lane and Richard Gere. So yeah, I mean, he's done a lot of movies, and a lot of them are pretty famous. However, I would say Jacob's Ladder, it seems, at least from the critic score and the user score, is his best movie, and it is probably his most different. All these other movies have kind of through lines within them, but this movie seems pretty different. I mean, there is like sensuality in the film it's played with, but it's not really a focus. It's more about the character, Tim Robbins' character, and his journey. So maybe this director, Adrian Lin, has missed his calling. He should have done more psychological horror movies than all these other romantic movies. But anyway, I have gotten completely off track. Like I was saying, I'm going to do a little synopsis. Basically, Jacob Singer, the main character of the movie, he goes to Vietnam, and he has this really bad battle in Vietnam that causes some of his buddies to die and get hurt, and he himself gets stabbed with the bayonet, and then it kind of skits to him in New York afterwards, and immediately he's struggling with reality and seeing these demons. And basically, like, the beginning of the movie has him in a subway, and he's in a subway station. When he gets off, he doesn't know how to get out. Like, he's trapped. All the exits are barred off or gated off, and then so he starts walking on the rails. And he almost gets hit by a subway train. And as the subway train is passing by, there's all these like people that are looking at him with their hands on the windows. And as he passes by the back window, there's this guy with like no face but glasses on, just looking at him and waving. And it's really just, like I said, high strangeness. It's horrifying. If I was a kid and I watched this, I would be very disturbed by that imagery. But it's definitely not going to spook you out to the point where you're like going to have to hide under the covers. But it is like off-putting. It's very high strange. It's very not real. You're obviously, his disassociation from reality or his inability to see reality. And you know, you're following him. So he's kind of like the unreliable narrator. So as an audience, we're kind of just along for the ride, for his ride. And so whenever reality starts breaking for him, we're right there with him. That's the perspective that we're taking. And so that's a really interesting, I really enjoy that aspect of it, because it really, you just never, you kind of have like a, maybe an uneasiness the whole movie, because you just never know when he's going to kind of go through one of these episodes. He also had a son who was actually played by Macaulay Culkin before Home Alone, who died before the war, and so he's dealing with the trauma of that situation as well. So he's kind of got it on both sides. Not only does he have like PTSD from Vietnam, but he also has this trauma from that he hasn't really been dealing with from his dead son. So you got a lot going on here. Basically, he's trying to figure out what's going on, like it's some kind of conspiracy with these demons coming after him, and at the same time, he's also trying to deal with the loss of his son, the dissolution of his marriage, and he can't really keep it together in life. He's working as a postman, even though he's a professor, because he kind of wants to turn his brain off now, because he doesn't understand what's going on, and he doesn't feel like he can really be very stable. And then one day his buddy from Vietnam calls him up and basically says he's been seeing demons too. And that's when the conspiracy really gets going, because he's like, oh, so you guys are feeling it too. The whole squad that was with him that night is also having this craziness. So they're starting to blame the military. It's starting to get a little crazy. because they're like, what's happening? So that, I'll leave it there because it goes on from there. And that's really the hook of the movie. If you really want to watch this without any spoilers, just turn this off now and go watch it because it's really good. Really enjoyed that movie. It's a thinker. I'd love to hear your thoughts on it. But from here on out, we're going to be talking about the movie, spoilers and all. So be warned. Don't say I didn't tell you. So basically, the thing is that Jacob, Tim Robbins' character, is basically in limbo. He's in that he's having a near-death experience the entire movie. And at the end of the movie, he finally dies. The idea is that he is basically having to, in those last moments of life, as he gets stabbed by the bayonet, and he's being life-flighted to a military barracks hospital, field hospital kind of thing, and they're working on him to try to keep him alive, and he's been fighting the whole time. And in this period of time where they're fighting for his life, he is in this dream state. And that makes sense, too, because that's why he's having all these quote-unquote flashbacks of him being life-flighted after having a bayonet stabbed in him and all this stuff. But it's like probably him really going in and out of consciousness, which is pretty wild if you think about it from the movie's perspective, because those are just, they seem like flashbacks, but they're not flashbacks. They're him coming back and forth from real reality. So really cool there. It's one of those things, like, I really want to watch this again because you'll probably pick up on a lot of little things like that. Some of these demons, some of these visions that he's having is probably manifestations of what's going on in real life. But also, he has this chiropractor friend who, I guess he knew him before the war. That's why he's kind of manifesting him like this. And he goes to the chiropractor, and the chiropractor at one point takes him out of the hospital because he goes in and out of the hospital many times during the movie. But at one point, he takes him out of the hospital so he can work on him, in a chiropractic way. And then Jacob admits to him that he's been seeing demons. He's been seeing things. And he's afraid things are coming after him. And the guy stops and basically he quotes this writer, this author who's talked about going to hell and how he realized that hell is not what he thought it was. Jacob thinks that he's going to hell, but in reality, it's the attachments in his life. It's the trauma. It's the death of his son. It's basically his soul is staying on Earth, and it's when he needs to let go of those things. He needs to make peace with the attachments in his life. And then those demons will turn into angels. And at first, it didn't really make too much sense to me. But then as the movie progresses, he eventually, that's basically what he does. He eventually comes to terms with his son's death, with his divorce, with all these things. And he goes back home to his original house before the war. And he sees his son, he hugs him, he kind of breaks down with the son, and then together they walk up the stairs in the house, and they, in the cliche way, they go into the light. And as he goes into the light, the screen fills up with light, and then it cuts to him in the field hospital, and he's just died. But as they are finishing up on him, they say, he looks pretty peaceful, actually. And I love that because it's basically like he's been going through so much inside of that brain. You guys don't even know. But now he's okay with dying. He's okay with going up, I guess, Jacob's ladder. That's what the conceptually I really am struggling. I'm trying to figure out what Jacob's ladder is, because that's another reveal. While he's still in this dream state reality, he talks to a scientist who reveals to him that basically he was part of what is ostensibly MK Ultra or government CIA programs that were made to use drugs to see if they could use mind control or augment soldiers, that kind of thing. And the whole thing that happened that night in Vietnam, where things got really hairy at the beginning of it's the intro of the movie, that whole situation was not against Viet Cong combatants. It's actually against another platoon of soldiers, because that entire battalion was dosed with a drug that was supposed to make them more aggressive, make them violent, but effectively make them successful in an offensive that they thought that wasn't going to go well anyway. And so he actually gets stabbed not by a Viet Cong soldier, which is what he thought. He got stabbed by it was friendly fire by another soldier that was just like him. But in that conversation, he calls the drug the ladder, because it's like an LSD trip or a some kind of hallucinogen drug trip, but you're just going straight down. And so in the interpretation of the latter, in at least in this, you know, of course, he's still in his little mind prison. The guy is saying that the ladder is a drug. It's going down. The ladder is in a downward trajectory. Whereas the biblical Jacob's ladder is, I mean, there is angels going down, but there's angels going up as well. I had to brush up on it because I was like, I know this is a biblical thing. And so basically in Genesis, Jacob's character has a vision of a giant ladder or a staircase, some kind of causeway between heaven and earth. But in this one, it's angels going down and back. And so in the story, if you think about it, the ladder, Jacob's ladder, it's him ascending to heaven in a way, I guess, even though it's supposed to be angels. But maybe it is his son. I'm literally processing this as I'm talking. Maybe it is that his son is the angel that takes him up into heaven. He's becoming an angel by dying and ascending to heaven, I guess. And he's being escorted by his son who died before Vietnam. His son was already dead, and so there, he's kind of letting him come up with him. So I guess maybe that is the point maybe of the movie. Jacob's ladder, in the practical sense, within the dream that he's having, is this drug that takes you straight down. And throughout the movie, he thinks that he's going to hell. But the doctor tells him that his demons, what he perceives as demons, will actually turn into angels once he makes peace with his attachments on earth. And so maybe it is. Maybe it still is. Jacob's ladder is upward trajectory. He just had it, he kind of had it in reverse because of his relationships with his past. And so that's why this movie is so fun, because I mean, look, it's so much to get into. Obviously, this conceptually, it's great, and you're following along the whole movie. It's easy to follow along, even though at the same time you're going, what the heck is happening? And I think that's fun too. It's not so out there that you can't keep your head around it. You know, like, you're aware that he's crazy, so you know you're going to be seeing all these weird visions, but you're also still rooted in within a core story that once you see the payoff, it all makes sense. It's not something that, like, the twist is not cheap. It's something that actually enriches the film, and the concepts behind the movie, with the twist included, are multifaceted and very, not complex, but deep. Maybe is the better word. It's multilateral. It's a thinker without being like too confusing. Like, I don't think anyone's going to get to the end of that movie and be like, what did I just watch? Like, and not understand. They'll get it to an extent, but there's still more to talk about afterwards, if that makes sense. So it's deep, but also accessible, which is like my favorite type of deep movie. It's not something that you're going to need to get, go online and be like, what did this movie mean? Cause that's kind of annoying. I think that if it's done right, A Good Thinker is a movie that is still accessible, something that is going to stick with you. And then upon that multiple viewings, you're going to pick up on things that's going to help you understand even more, but you already kind of understand the core of what it meant. I think everyone can understand that when he walks into the light, that he has made peace with his past, that he has processed his trauma, and that he's ready for the next life. I think that is a very simple concept to understand, but then as you go back and watch it again, you understand how that concept is represented, and it gets a little bit more complicated. So there's more if you want it, and if you want to leave it at that, then you're going to have a good experience as well. Love it. Okay, we're running out of time, so I want to actually talk about some of the other things. Like, Tim Robbins is great. You know, I didn't even realize that Tim Robbins was such a comedy actor. I was like looking up Tim Robbins a little bit, because like in film school, I had to watch The Player, that Robert Altman film. Like, film school people love that movie, and it's a great movie, but it's definitely like a movie. Like, it's a movie about making movies and the inner workings of Hollywood. So, of course, a lot of filmmakers and film students and film staff and stuff like that love that movie. So I always thought of him with that and Shawshank Redemption and this movie. I hadn't seen it, but I know he was in it, and I like always thought he was kind of more of a serious actor. But I saw a little note that said that Tim Robbins wanted to take Jacob's Ladder because he felt like he could do more than just comedy. And I had to like look back through his discography and be like, what have you done? Oh, he was in Howard the Duck, you know. he's been in a lot of comedy movies as kind of a silly guy, which I'd never really thought of because I'm thinking of movies like Shawshank and this movie and The Player, which The Player is a little silly, but very high caliber actor, not really thinking of him as being someone who would, not that you can't do a high caliber comedy, of course you can, but there's a reason why he was saying that he wanted to do something else besides comedy, because, you know, you get typecast and you get put in a corner and there's a connotation to comedy actors that they're not as high level as actors who do really serious roles. This is definitely one of those movies where it's not Oscar bait necessarily, but it is like, it's so serious and dramatic and all those things. And it's such a good role for him that I feel like he maybe could have gotten an Oscar, although I looked it up and they didn't even get nominated or even close to anything. And I know I did bad in the box office. So I think this is one of those movies that was a bit of a sleeper at the time, and it just slowly gathered steam afterwards, which that does happen sometimes, and I think it deserves it. I mean, this is not the most accessible movie, like I even though I said it was just a couple minutes ago, but as far as like popular audiences, like when you see Jacob's Ladder in theaters, you might not think, oh, let's go watch that, especially in 1990. But I think once anyone does watch it, they're like, oh, wow, this movie is actually great. But anyway, Tim Robbins did a great job, and it just made me have that much more respect for him. He had to play a really hard role, someone who's losing his mind, but also the balance between losing his mind, but especially towards the beginning of the movie when he's just trying to be regular guy. He had a lot of personality, and his relationship with his kind of girlfriend at the time, it seemed very genuine. It was played very well, and it gave you, I think it was really important because movies like, I'm trying to think, like that movie Smile from a couple years ago, I know a lot of people like it, but I didn't really like it that much, and one of the reasons why is because the main character was crazy from the very beginning. Like, it took 2 seconds for her to start like falling apart and being crazy. There wasn't enough development with her being a normal person. I kind of have a problem with The Shining for that same reason. Jack Nicholson's character is kind of off from the very beginning. You don't really get the sense that he's some nice dad who falls into madness. He's just kind of weird to begin with, and I think even Stephen King complained about that because in the book it's a lot more of a gradual change. And in this movie, he's having a crazy, like that subway scene is like the first scene of him in New York after the intro with Vietnam, and he's having an episode. So you first see him as being kind of kooky, but then he gets home to his apartment and he's a total normal guy. He's having a good conversation with his girlfriend. They're having a good time. They really feel genuinely in love with each other, or at least, you know, have a good relationship. And his relationship with his doctor, with other people around him, it seems like he's kind of a nice guy and smart, witty, that kind of stuff. He doesn't seem just crazy from the beginning. It seems like a normal guy who is struggling, like, because it comes in waves. There are scenes that are normal, and then that normal scene will turn into something bad. And that is, I think, it really serves the film because it gives you an emotional connection to him, because you know that you're rooting for him. You want him to figure this out because it hurts to see him struggling so much. So I thought that was really well done. And that's good writing, but it's also good acting from Tim Robbins because he can play that character and feel likable. Okay, and then also I really enjoyed the cinematography. There's one particular scene where he's being wheeled on a gurney, and they had these low shots of him, of the gurney wheel, like spinning and like being off track. And apparently he actually, like, I noted that. I was like, this is such a cool little scene, cinematography wise. The camera work is great. And apparently the director purposely messed with the gurney to make it not be a very, it feels like you're at Walmart and you're trying to push a cart because there's always one wheel that's just bad. And it's just like that, but it increases that concept that he's got a screw loose or something, or that his reality is breaking. The wheel is a little off. And I really liked that. There's a lot of little scenes like that. A lot of really cool little shots. I can't get into all of them cause I'm running out of time, but I really enjoy the cinematography. And the practical effects, or the special effects, I should say, were apparently all done in, like, as they were shooting live. They were not, there was really not much, any post-production special effects, which is pretty crazy because especially some of the scenes, there's famously a lot of scenes with people's heads, like, shaking and they're, like, really, really fast twitching, which is scary, of course. But what they did was they shot a regular person doing that, shaking their head and doing that, but at like a 4 frames per second. And then they sped it up to the normal 24 frames per second, and it created that effect of it going way faster. And I honestly feel like that makes it scarier. I think the practical aspect of that, the fact that it was like it really was someone shaking their head a lot, and instead of having to, you know, do CGI or anything like that, it was just a guy really shaking his head a bunch, and that's, you know, really disturbing and just plain nightmare fuel. So I really appreciated that there wasn't really any special effects done that were in post-production. I think that's really impressive, especially for a movie that is so crazy and reality-breaking. There's a lot of stuff going on, and it's a rubber reality film. I really love that term. I need to figure out who said that so I can give them credit. This is a user on IMDb that did a review. But yeah, I really love this movie. I still haven't given a rating. I think I'm going to give it an 8.5 out of 10. You know, I really have nothing bad to say about it. I think 8.5 is fair. It's not like the greatest movie I've ever seen, but it, because it sticks with you and because I have nothing to complain about and only good things to say, I think 8.5 out of 10 is fair. And some people might even say more. Now, the reviews on IMDb, it's got a 7.4 user rating and a 62 Metascore, which is still in the green, but it barely. And I wonder what people's problems was with it. I mean, it's more of a drama than a horror movie. I was expecting it to be more horrifying, but I was surprised pleasantly by the drama. So I can't really hold it against it for not living up to the expectations that I gave it in my own head. So yeah, great movie. 8.5 out of 10. I highly recommend. And for those of you that don't really like horror very much, it might be a good movie for you because it's dramatic and it's sad, but it's not like so sad that you're like, I can't watch this. And it's also not horrifying, so horrifying that you're like, I can't watch this. I think it really, it straddles a good middle line between drama, horror, and mystery that will keep you engaged and will keep you talking about it afterwards. So Jacob's Ladder, this is a great start for this rubber reality theme. Can't wait to get into the other two. The next one I've actually seen, but I saw it so long ago that I really don't even remember anything about it. So it just fits so perfectly into the theme, and I've wanted to revisit it anyway. But we'll get into that next episode. So I'm running super late. I hope you guys enjoyed this episode. Watch that movie. It's so fun. Try to find it somewhere cheaper than Amazon because, wow, it's like $9.99 or something. But I certainly don't regret the purchase. Well, I hope you guys have a great week this week, and I will see you next Friday.